Been a lot of talk over the last week about how easily North Korea's Kim Jong-un conned the ever-confident and perpetually unprepared Mr. Trump in their big summit in Singapore. And yes, for someone who has spent decades monitoring U.S.-North Korean relations, writing about them every year in my annual on East and Southeast Asia, much of what happened was astounding. I mean, watching Trump give away all his diplomatic bargaining chips for nothing more than vague promises that Kim Jong-un's father had long ago offered both the Clinton and second Bush administrations. Not forgetting his venerated grandfather Kim Il-sung's discussions with the former American president Jimmy Carter long before that was breathtaking. I mean, watching Trump hand the young fellow the aura of international legitimacy the world's most repressive state has long sought. Indeed, giving the man a victory neither his father nor grandfather had accomplished was pretty amazing. I mean, Christmas in June for North Korea's killer state, a regime that has run concentration camps for significantly longer than Hitler or Stalin ever did. A regime whose official policy is to imprison and punish even the family members of anyone whose behavior the state has found unacceptable. A regime led by a man who may have inherited the title of leader, but who solidified his power over the dead bodies of his uncle and half-brother, treated by the Donald as someone worthy of the trust by the man who holds what used to be thought of as the leadership of the free world. Indeed, a meeting that will make it all the easier for human rights-trashing North Korea to gain the rewards of membership in the Economic Community of Nations. No, it is extraordinarily hard not to see Trump's activities in Singapore as a singular act of international naivete. But looking closer, this commentator finds himself hard-pressed to decide who was the more naive, Mr. Trump, or the summit's apparent winner, Kim Jong-un himself. Sure, young Mr. Kim has accomplished, and on the cheap, the international legitimacy his grandfather and father unsuccessfully sought for years, and is obviously following the very strategic path he publicly laid out long before Trump began his ever-so-innocent charm offensive. First, the creation of a nuclear deterrence against the arch-enemy, the United States, and then moving on to integrate North Korea into the larger world economy, which Mr. Trump has ever so graciously given a huge boost. But modernizing North Korea is quite another thing from building a nuclear deterrence. Sure, it seems obvious that Kim thinks his family monarchy can accomplish such a task while retaining power. No doubt impressed with how well the Chinese Communist Party navigated the path from economic backwater to economic dynamo without losing control. But the historical record suggests otherwise. Indeed, it's quite obvious to anyone who follows the rhymes of history that trying to transform a repressive government while retaining control is one of the biggest challenges any government can possibly face. Indeed, from Napoleon III's efforts in the mid-1860s to Gorbachev in the late 1980s, such efforts, by their nature, almost always release uncontrollable forces and levels of confusion almost impossible to contain. Indeed, China's communist leaders themselves almost lost everything in 1989's drama in Tiananmen Square. And we are talking here about an especially vicious regime, North Korea, one whose population has been so beaten down over the generations that the sheer act of raising their expectations is likely to release a whirlwind of emotions from greed to revenge that Kim Jong-un is unlikely to be able to control. The worst dictators are, after all, still mere mortals sitting atop a pyramid of human relationships that dramatic changes by their nature disrupt, making an explosion of civil unrest in North Korea, one very likely not only to pull down the regime, but destabilize much of Northeast Asia, a very real possibility, leaving us with the obvious question, who really was the most naive of the two fellows who met in Singapore